This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin Mark and Wong Shanning. It's 7.06 a.m., 20th of May, a Wednesday. And in about 15 minutes, we're going to be speaking with the Minister of Science and Technology, Khairi Jamaluddin, on some of the funding lines available for technology startups. So be sure not to miss that conversation happening in about 15 minutes. But right now, the markets.
Well, U.S. Markets were in the red after the optimistic results of that Moderna vaccine study were questioned by experts. And that was actually one of the reasons why markets did so well on Monday. But last night, the Dow closed down 1.6%. The S&P 500 was down 1.1%, while Nasdaq was down 0.5%. And closer to home in Asia, the Nikkei 225 closed up 1.5%. Shanghai up 0.8%. Hang Seng was up 1.9%. Kospi did stellar, up 2.3%. Straits Times Index was 1.7%, while the FBM KLCI closed up 1%. But I seriously doubt we're going to get such a nice green day today.
So to give us more insight into where these global markets are headed, we have on the line with us this morning, Jeffrey Halley, Senior Market Analyst at Owanda. Thanks very much for joining us this morning, Jeffrey. So it's one day up, one day down for markets. Volatility seems to be the name of the game here. Does this mean that investors need to take shorter trading positions and be alert on the news flow?
And good morning, ladies. Good to be here. I think it depends on what you're trying to achieve. If you're a long-term investor, then you should be ignoring the ructions and the twos and fros of intraday volatility. And if we're all honest, there's plenty of it these days. If you're more of a trader rather than a longer-term investor and you're much more short-term in your horizons and you're looking to flip in and out of your positions, then you're probably more than likely to be chasing this this volatility as it moves day to day, because what you're looking to do is move with the intraday momentum, be that up or down. So I think it very much depends on your time horizon. From a longer term investor's point of view, though, the lack of a theme can be a bit frustrating.
And let's shift our attention to precious metal, right? Because gold has been quietly rising, on some days breaking 1750 resistant levels. What's the reason for gold demand at this time?
Yes. Well, I will note that 1750 is a very important resistance level, and although gold's been teasing us, we're yet to have a daily close above that level. And I think from a technical point of view, for those who are more bullish on the yellow metal, we need to see a daily close above that level, even if it does actually break it on an intraday basis. Gold itself, since time immemorium, has always been a hedge against volatility and uncertainty, and we certainly have more than enough uncertainty in this day and age. So there's a natural reason there to buy gold anyway, as a store of wealth and a hedge. It's also a hedge against inflation. With the sheer volume of unconventional monetary policy easing by the world central banks, the issuance of debt, the scale of that on the fiscal front by the governments around the world, that has led to a belief that inflation could finally make an appearance again in 2021. I won't disagree with that thesis. I think there is actually a reasonably good chance that could happen. We could see the return of inflation, particularly if national supply lines, if we have seen peak globalization and we're seeing supply lines for countries very much brought back within borders, that would raise costs and raise inflation. So I think those two factors, uncertainty and inflation, or the potential for inflation, are what really are driving this gold rally and probably set it for much higher levels to come in 2020 and 2021, assuming that we don't suddenly get a COVID-19 vaccine.
And also just taking a look at one of our largest northern neighbours, Jeffrey, China is said to be considering further debt relief to stave off bankruptcies from businesses. How do you think the PBOC and other banks will coordinate this effort if it does come to pass?
There has been talk here that the Chinese federal government will increase its deficit, and we will start seeing the issuance of a lot of special treasury bonds to fund this debt relief. The government there can also drop the RRR rate, the reserve requirement that banks are required to hold. They've already done that, and they've signaled that more's on the way. And being China, they can then actually just instruct the banks to go out and lend or to forgive debt. They can change the accounting rules so that banks don't have to provide bad debts against non-paying companies as quickly. There's a variety of instruments in these ways. We could also see a fall in funding rates. We have the loan prime rates announcements for the 1 in 5 year Chinese loan prime rates today, and we may actually start seeing those being cut. They have been signalling that in the past week. So they have a variety of tools in the box that they can use.
So, Jeffrey, does this mean that the Chinese economy is actually weaker than what we know of?
I don't really think the evidence is there yet. What we haven't seen is a lot of very, very, very aggressive action by either the government or the PBOC to enact stimulus as we have in the past. If we can cast our minds back to the global financial crisis, China almost single-handedly launched this enormous stimulus package at that stage, which single-handedly lifted the world basically from what would have been a depression to something approaching more of a very bad recession. We've not seen that typical response from China thus far. So that may mean that they don't think that the economy requires as much help initially. Bear in mind that China was the first into COVID-19 and it was the first out, so to speak, although they do appear to be having secondary infection issues right at the moment. But the data itself since then hasn't been that bad. So I think overall it's probably too soon to say, and a lot of how China performs will be dependent on how the rest of the world performs.
And so, while not specifically naming China, Nasdaq's new rules for IPOs seems to be aimed at them. Is this a sign of US-China trade tensions, and might it also lead to fewer China listings in the US?
The timing is unusual, I will grant that. But when you look at what they're looking to do, what they're trying to achieve is for new listings to have a certain amount of liquidity available. So what they're trying to say is that you need to have a minimum of $25 million worth of free float stock floated on the exchange at IPO, or 25% of your total capital. What we've seen in the past, and it just happened to be Chinese IPOs, Chinese company IPOs that have been the main culprits, is they've actually released very little of the free float, of the total free float of the stock onto the IPO, which has led to liquidity issues and there being not enough liquidity for investors to buy and sell or to exit positions in it. So the rule is designed to improve that measure substantially. It just happens to be that Chinese companies have been the most aggressive users of the NASDAQ for IPOs, and thus it falls on their shoulders disproportionately. Overall, though, I suspect that what we will see, though, is more Chinese mainland companies heading to Hong Kong to do their IPOs.
Well, thank you very much for weighing in on this with us this morning, Jeffrey. That was Jeffrey Halley, Senior Market Analyst at Awanda, giving us his take on the NASDAQ's new rules, as well as what other policy instruments the PBOC has at its disposal. You know, he highlighted very pointedly there that, you know, China being what it is, as he says, they can just go and instruct the banks to lend more.
Yeah, it has full control over monetary and fiscal policies, 100%.
So we're going to be taking a look at more stories in just a few minutes. So up next is why tech startups deserve more help, as explained by the Minister of Science and Technology, Kari Jamaluddin, in his own words. Stay tuned after these messages. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.